Hi, this is Paul. So I made my video, the one I'll release before this one, about this supposed, the one that I imagine, apocalypse of angry women who have been cheated of their life. And sure enough, what doesn't Twitter serve up to me today? But I actually saw it via somebody else's tweet. I think I saved. Let me find it. Here, I could do it this way. Part of the beauty of Twitter is you can read other people's emails in some ways. Mr. Crosby, I followed Tara Isabella Burton on Twitter, so I knew this was Mr. Crosby. Gosh, that op-ed on divorce going around is ... bleak. Tara Isabella Burton. I'm pretty used to self-care screeds, but my mouth literally dropped open on that one. So it was like, oh, let's go find the article. Mr. Crosby. Yep. Mr. Crosby. My husband was totally reasonable to expect that I'd change and be an involved parent, but I love myself and my job more than him and my kids, and this is why that's good, actually. Mr. Crosby again. Oh, she wrote a piece a few years ago entitled, I Picked My Job Over My Kids, which concludes with this. I hope my kids get it. I think they do. I love them beyond all reason. And their existence gives my life profound meaning, and I have the same feelings about my job. I read this, and so then it's like, what do I do with my last video? Do I throw it away? No, definitely not. And so, of course, I had to look up these pieces. And divorce can be an act of radical self-love. The line that really got me was way down here. My divorce spared my children that pain and let me live the life I was meant to. Purpose much? I view that as an accomplishment. And it's like we have to imbue our behavior with divine attribution and approval, don't we? That's what the secret sacred self is for, in this case, her work. So divorce can be an act of self-love. Yeah. Is that really? Oh, see. Now, when I say, is that really so hard for us? And you people will be out there, and people do have a hard time. You know, Jordan Peterson has to write a rule, which even Vaush, in his little evaluation of Jordan Peterson's 24 rules, likes that. You know, treat yourself as if you were someone you were responsible for taking care of. So yeah, people struggle with self-love. I get that. But, you know, that followed up, I've picked my job over my kids, published 2019. And then the New York Times pinned pick correspondent said this, there's a lot I learned from this piece. I'm a single, never married, without children. So I've never lived the experience of this family. I've been for many years intensely career focused, and not many marry or have children. I do not want to compromise and have never met a potential partner who is willing to agree to a traditional breadwinner homemaker split of the labor family life. I will never sit in my child's wedding because I am childless. I will die without anyone at my bedside. Bleak. When I retire, there will be a void in my life when my professional and work contacts have withered away. That is the price I'll pay for putting my career at the center of my life, more important things than being a family person. I understand how family can become idolatrous. I get that. But wow. I've made my peace with it and have wounded nobody. My conscience is clear. Wow. So anyway, maybe everything I said is wrong. Maybe you can have a meaningful and wonderful life without any human attachment. Maybe you can, as C.S. Lewis says, keep your heart from being broken by putting it in a very safe little box and never letting anyone touch it. But then does it atrophy? So I came to this podcast because of the discussion, not about family or monogamy or commitment or any of that. I came to it because of the conversation about wokeness as a religion. And that also didn't disappoint. So let's keep going with it.
That's very interesting. And yeah, I think that there's a lot of interesting things in these findings that actually women are outcompeting men in high schools and therefore getting degrees at a higher rate. That both goes against sort of the general narrative about what's happening in our society at the moment, but also helps to explain some of those gender dynamics and even some of the sort of reaction you might get on Twitter or something like that. I think that's right.
Now, just one other thing to say about the marriage and family thing. Men in the post-war period in many ways lived that life of selling themselves out to the career. And many of those men lived to regret it. Men, in a sense, were given public sanction to go ahead and do that. And many men lived to regret it. All right, back to woke and religious.
We had a little bit of a chat before the interview, and you said it really annoys you when people liken wokeness to a religion, and it annoys you as a religious person. Explain, first of all, what the argument is that there is this sort of parallel between wokeness and religion, and why it is that you don't buy that.
Yeah, I do get those requests not infrequently. And there has been a huge amount of writing already on the proposed parallels between wokeness and religion. And it always strikes me as a little bit insulting when one comes to my inbox, because I guess there are kind of three ways you can make this argument. One is wokeness is like a religion because it's dogmatic and it's not subject to criticism and you just blindly believe it like an idiot.
Now, I think she really handles this in a fascinating way, and I really liked the argument she made. So I sort of decided I wanted to take notes, and then of course, why not take notes? Let's see if I can arrange. I'm using OBS here. If I can arrange. Rick tells me that I cover too much of the screen with other things, and I should leave myself in the screen more. And so my apologies to Rick for being a bad YouTuber here, but I'm going to do, it's my channel and I'll do what I want. So this is how the sausage gets made. And maybe some of you are saying, if you hadn't made that darn video about apologizing for your channel, then you've just given yourself an excuse to have even poorer production qualities. So wokeness and religion, reasons. We'll do the bullet points for that. Let's go back and hear this first one.
Which, as a religion, one comes to get those requests not infrequently. And there has been a huge amount of writing already on the proposed parallels between wokeness and religion. And it always strikes me as a little bit insulting when one comes to my inbox, because I guess there are kind of three ways you can make this argument. One is wokeness is like a religion because it's dogmatic and it's not subject to criticism. And you just
wokeness is like a religion. And this would sort of be the celebrity atheist. Because it's dogmatic, and let's just improve it a little bit. It's pre-rational. It's presuppositional.
You just blindly believe it like an idiot, which as a religious person, I feel like, you know, thanks. It's not precisely how I conceive of being religious.
Now, let's pause there, because she's going to work on this a little bit more. And again, I've very impressed a lot of, I mean, these are both very smart, well-educated people here. So I'm impressed at how she tackles this. But so how do you imagine you have a religion? Because I don't have any embarrassment by the fact that I inherited this from my parents, and it was part of the first draft that I absorbed, and I don't really, in the face of the vaunted assault of celebrity atheism, I don't really feel a great deal of need to somehow defend my religiosity. I'm low in negative emotions. I don't really see them as judge over my life, and I just don't. I've listened to too much Alvin Plantinga over the years. I think it's simply basic. But anyway, let's keep going.
The other is that, well, wokeness fulfills some kind of need that religion fulfills for people. This is sort of the Durkheimian analysis of what religion is.
So wokeness fulfills some kind of need. I realize that this is really bad podcasting because whereas the video people get to watch me type poorly, the podcasters just have to listen to click, 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 click.
What it's doing, again, as a religious person, not precisely how I conceive of what the faith is. And also not totally certain that that's unique to either religion or wokeness. And then
So in other words, you know, the first one is that wokeness is dogmatic. And this is one of the arguments I hear from the celebrity atheists. It's arbitrary. It's dogmatic. It's those at least in the celebrity atheist camp. It's arbitrary. It's dogmatic. It fails to live up to their vision of what adult beliefism looks like, even though a good many cognitive scientists, John Vervaeke, clinical psychologist Jordan Peterson, say that's not anyway the way that you think you just sort of rationally thought this up and that's how you come to your beliefs. That idea is like the tooth fairy. So that's the first one. The second one, wokeness fulfills some kind of need.
Last is that wokeness is supplanting, you know, sort of taking the place of religion in society or in lives of people who are heavily invested in it. And this is an argument frequently made by other religious people about wokeness. And I'm not sure that I agree with it.
So now I think these three are actually all three very good reasons. I think she's listening carefully to the critics.
Any of those analyses, but I disagree with them in different ways and to different degrees, I suppose.
So the first one, I sort of find easy to understand why it is like that. The second and third, I'm a little bit more surprised by because I've heard many quite religious people give versions of that analysis. And I think of both of those. I think the distinction between the Durkheimian...
So the first one, let's say, I got to change the... The first one is, let's say, the source or justification of privileged public knowledge. Oh, my drug users are, lately they've had a pattern of coming to sit right by my door this time of day because, you know, the day's kind of over. They've done a little, there's just two people here of the regular homeless that do the panhandling at the corner. All the other panhandlers are imports. And one of these days I saw one up there that looked like an absolute Karen. She was wearing her jeans cuffed up. She had flip flops. She was wearing a stylish shirt and she had a cardboard sign. And I so wanted to stop and say, do you live in Elk Grove? Do you live in a suburban tract home? Is this how you're paying your mortgage at your crazily expensive California house? So this couple, it's an older woman and a man with a shaved head, they usually sit down here about this time of day and do a little drugs. And what's so funny is that I regularly have them here and I open the door and the door hits them and they act so surprised. And it's like, we do this all the time, this little dance between the three of us. And they quickly hide their drugs because they don't want the pastor to see. And why they don't want the pastor to see, I have no idea, because they don't go to my church and they're doing drugs in a public place on at the same time almost every day. So anyway, back to the video. So the first one is sort of source or justification of public knowledge. The second one fulfills some kind of need, and this is sort of religion as sort of a natural process by which we meet needs, emotional needs, let's say.
One and the supplanting one is interesting and subtle, but I think in the way that people tend to think about it, they run those two things together. And so there's a kind of account which, broadly speaking, says you need an ordering ideology in order to understand the world. You know, people have strong feelings of guilt and a way of trying to get a clean conscience about the world in a meaningful way. And what, you know, sort of religious people who make this analogy would say is that, you know, religion does that in a meaningful way, right? It does that in a way that, according to them, is rooted in truth, and that's rooted in a sort of whole complicated theology about why we should, in fact, feel guilty and how it is that we can gain some amount of forgiveness from that guilt.
And of course, meaning would be a big part of that need base. And of course, the second one is also sort of undercut by celebrity atheists, because they want to say we shouldn't derive, not just celebrity atheists, but others, we shouldn't try to derive meaning from participation in a particular story when stories are arbitrary or unjustifiable. They're just kind of floating out there. And so actually, I find within both the first and the second objection, especially by celebrity atheists or the new atheist community, a sort of pride beneath it, that it's somehow below human dignity to find meaning in arbitrary stories, that, you know, the vision of rational humanity is one that derives its knowledge from pure reason among us, and so on and so forth. I started listening to Rationality Rules put out a new video where the dude is stuck on Jordan Peterson, which is really interesting. And of course, I have suspicions, like many other people have suspicions about me. I mean, is it just for the algorithm that you do these videos? I don't think so. I don't think so at all. You know, and then he gets on the I might do a video on that, because I thought, you know, again, with even though I disagree with Rationality Rules often, and I think some of his arguments are not very good, I don't know. It's, you know, maybe it's just the algorithm. It's popping them up on my feed. Anyway, I'm ADHDing too much. Back to the video.
Why that's a meaningful thing. And when they say that then has positive side effects for society, that religious societies bind you to an institution that gives you moral rules, that incentivizes you to care for your neighbor and for the members of your community and to do charity. And that the problem in their view of wokeness is that it does prey on all of those instincts, but it does it precisely without the serious theology, without the tie to a meaningful community, without pushing people towards charitable work in quite the same way.
So in other words, if there's pride beneath the new atheists' vision of why we shouldn't be religious out of need or pre-rational presuppositions, there's pride beneath the religious objection to wokeness that it's, you know, sort of Jordan Peterson's comment that ideologies are crippled religions. They haven't had time to really become fully formed and do the right thing.
So I guess I'd like to hear in a little bit more detail why it is that, sort of from a religious perspective, you don't buy that analogy, or you find it even a little perhaps insulting to religion.
Well, I think that, you know, the idea that wokeness is meeting a certain need that religion also meets, I would put it this way. Religion as a concept is this epiphenomenon of liberalism, or an epiphenomenon of the Enlightenment, because there needed to be this category of stuff that was excluded or sanded down, if it was to be included whatsoever, in the public political sphere, right? Because there were these things that were causing too many problems to be included fully and full-bloodedly in politics, right? The Hundred Years' War and so forth. And so in the case of metaphysical liberalism, a la Rousseau, the idea is just to fully on transform religion into something that can cooperate with liberal democracy. And so what you do is you essentially just abolish all the religious institutions and the specificity. And to speak clearly, Christianity, you take out all of the institutions and the organizations, and you get to functionally private and entirely individualized and personally mediated spirituality. And that's really all that's left of it. This is the kind of moral therapeutic deism that people often complain about.
That was an amazing little summary of a lot of Tom Holland's stuff, of that religion is, again, a creation of the Enlightenment. That's part of what's so funny. We'll put that in the title here. That is a real fun little twist on the idea that the Enlightenment is somehow held in a clean room apart from religion. She sort of flips it and says, no, you don't understand. I think she's right. And it's basically the same argument Tom Holland's been making and demonstrating, I think, a la history, that religion was actually created by the Enlightenment. And people will step back and will say, well, no way. There were sacrifices. No, but the category of religion, that you took all of this stuff around us and we said, that's religious, and we're going to sort it all out and we're going to put it in this box. And once we put it in this box, then we know what to do with it. And if we get all that religious stuff in a box, we know what to do with it. We'll put that over on the private shelf and say, here, we're going to take all of this stuff out of the marketplace and the free and the naked public square, as it's not Niebuhr, it's the guy who started First Things. We're going to take all that stuff out of the naked public square and we're going to put it in a little box and you can take it home with you. But we're not going to have it in the public square anymore because that's religious. What we're going to have in the public square is, well, I suppose, reason and science and public knowledge. And what we don't recognize is, number one, we've made this move. And number two, there's lots of other stuff that we had to keep in the public square because the public square couldn't function without it. And we've just said, okay, because that didn't go in a little box and go home with you, that's not religious. But what went in the little box and went home with you, that's religious. You can have whatever you want in that little box, but these are the rules. And so, you know, again, a lot of when we talk about the stuff with Jordan Peterson, oh, this doesn't look so good. Maybe Rick is right. I'll make the box a little smaller and put it up here. Okay. I was covering it so I couldn't see it. So when we see Jordan Peterson sort of acting all, you know, when people start pressing, well, do you believe in God? It's almost like we, you know, asked him boxers or briefs. That's none of your business what I believe or don't believe, what I do in the privacy of my own home. But of course, that all has been what we're doing in the privacy of our own home is now becoming aspects of our identity and must be somehow included in public legislation. But that's a different video. So the point that she's making is that, you know, basically an exchange happened here, and it was an important exchange because on the basis of this exchange, we sort of outlined new rules about what is properly done in private and what isn't. That's a really big deal. And that's something that actually takes a little bit for a lot of people to recognize. And now the idea is, well, wokeness almost seems to be something that someone had in their house and took out and brought it back into the market square and said, try some of this on, bigot. And I thought we were keeping those things in. So where are the lines?
Christian circles these days. And that's all that's left of the Christian traditionalized and essentially just abolish all the religious institutions and the specificity. And to speak clearly, Christianity.
And the specificity is important because, well, we're going to keep like really deracinated, naked, positive words in the marketplace. Like when the freedom from religion, and I didn't make a PowerPoint before I made this video, so I don't have that picture to pull up of the smiling dude looking over Sacramento on this one favorite billboard of mine that was there a few years, godless and full of wonder. Oh, okay. So I can So you have wonder at home too, and are you feeling a little insecure because religious people seem full of wonder and joy, or maybe lament and all those things? And so there's all of these aspects sort of get deracinated, and you can talk about joy and wonder and happiness and grief. You can talk about all of those things in the public square, but you especially have to sort of take away all of the religious, especially the Christian stuff. You can come out with Buddhist and Jewish and Muslims. Jewish is a little sketchy sometimes, but the Muslim and the stuff that feels exotic, you can pull that out, because then it's not scary because you're not haunted by it.
You take out all of the institutions and the organizations, and you get to functionally private and entirely individualized and personally mediated spirituality. And that's really all that's left of it. This is the kind of moral therapeutic deism that people often complain about in Christian circles these days. And that's all that's left of the Christian tradition and the kind of metaphysical liberal tradition. If you want to tell me that wokeness is similar to moral therapeutic deism, that's just a truism. That's just stating a fact, right? But that was done. That was something that people did, right?
But it, again, it was sort of brought out back in and said, no, this is what we should have. And those who had went through the process before said, wait a minute, we sort of took a whole bunch of things home and put them in a box and kept them in the private space. And the things out in the public space, you know, yeah, we left in God we trust on the money, and, you know, Ten Commandments on the courthouse. And, you know, we're just going to kind of look the other way at a bunch of things that seem really sort of deeply Christian, like all these values bringing out here. But we sort of sand them off and paint them so they have like love and hope and kindness and goodness. And like if we sort of remodel them and say, yeah, all the stuff with the Jesus labels on, we sort of tore them off and put them at home in the shrine or in these little private buildings called churches. And you can have that in your church. And, you know, we'll ask. But that's the separation. And then wokeness kind of comes back in and says, no, well, this too. I said, wait a minute, that looks, it's now it's just dressed up in different sort of deracinated, naked terms.
I mean, that was an intentional process that was carried out. That was a process of modifying previously existing traditions such that they would cooperate with liberal democracy. On the other hand, if you want to look at political liberalism, where these traditions theoretically keep their traditional forms, they're just excluded from public life. And if their thought wants to enter public life, it has to be translated into public reason per Rawls. Then this translation, you know, you sort of transmogrify the ideas somehow that they then become pleasing or acceptable to other people who don't share the priors of the tradition.
So. Because I've listened to it already, I know what's coming. I know the future. This part of it really fascinated me because I hadn't been aware of any of this, because I'm not fundamentally a political theorist. I'm just a local pastor. It sounds basically Rawls made the argument similar to what I just did, that sort of what we did was we, instead of actually taking things out of the public square and putting them in private, we sort of translated things, and it was sort of that repainting, pulling off the Jesus bumper stickers and the Jesus signs, and we sort of did this translation thing. But, you know, as time goes on, stuff at home continues to develop, and sometimes we want to do some Jesus smuggling and sneak it back into the public. And so when we come back into the public, we have to sort of make up new sounding stories that sound public-y and don't sound religious-y, Jesus-y.
If you want to tell me that wokeness is a religion in that respect, I have a much harder time imagining why. It just seems to be the argument in that case is, well, wokeness is an ideology that is functioning somewhat beyond reproach, or that it is not being adequately translated into public reason, right? Arguments are not.
Now this is interesting, because my argument is that wokeness is in fact an offshoot of Christianity. And when the new atheists argue that, I agree with them. And that's why you'll see new atheists agreeing with Calvinists and religious right conservatives that this is just another Christianity, but that sort of exposes and betrays the idea that a lot of the stuff that was left in the public, square, that was Christian too. We just painted it up and, you know, took the crosses off and took off the bumper stickers so people walking in wouldn't sort of be tipped off by the obvious symbolism. We just sort of had the shapes and the moral foundations in there still.
Being adequately fielded for the priors of wokeness. That seems to be the claim of wokeness as a religion in the politically liberal context.
For those of our listeners who may be less up on, you know, essentially the second big book by John Rawls, Political Liberalism, and the idea of public reason, let's unpack this a little bit. I mean, broadly speaking, the idea that Rawls has is that in a really diverse society, one of the ways in which we can all agree on a set of political rules is through something he calls the overlapping consensus. So you might believe in the rules of our democratic game because you're secular and you're a social democrat and you think they're good for that reason. And somebody else may believe in them because they're deeply rooted in a religious tradition that thinks that tolerance is important. And so therefore they're attracted to those rules. But importantly and controversially, Rawls then also says that, you know, if you want to reach your fellow citizens and make a political claim, if you're running a political campaign, or even just if you're, you know, having an argument on a podcast potentially, you should ideally formulate claims in ways that people from outside your own tradition can also understand, and that essentially ends up meaning in a kind of secular way. Now, I guess I have two questions. I mean, one of which is...
Okay, before we get to the questions, what's so interesting is that a lot of times when I make videos where I'm not quoting the Bible and I'm basically making rational arguments, this is exactly what I'm doing. They just described exactly what I'm doing. I am taking conclusions that I've arrived from Christian presuppositions and I am reformulating them with arguments that have to do with reason in order to achieve certain outcomes and goals, most of which have come from Christianity. And to one degree or another, wokeness is exactly the same thing. Part of the difficulty of wokeness, however, is, again, there's sort of an eschatological difference here, because back to Stephen Smith and his, when he talks about sort of neo-paganism as once again emphasizing getting back to the imminent, part of how wokeness is a function of secularity is there can be, because of this political translation, no appeals to an afterlife or an eschaton or a heaven or a hell. All things must come to pass in this world now, at least to the degree that they can be achieved. And that's another entire conversation. So there's a lot of this formulating, and let me pull in something else, make sure I'm still recording here. So I know I get complaints from you for recommending too many books. Well, I'm a light touch for book recommendations, and when I'm talking to John Vervaeke and J.P. Marceau, and John Vervaeke says, "The absolute best book on Plato, I just read it, and it was written by a Christian." Of course, while they're talking, I'm on Amazon.com. I bought the book and I've been reading it. And I know there's all kinds of books that I have yet to finish reading. And the first sentence of the book, it's not in Kindle, and I should really grab some reading glasses. A few years ago, I went to, because my wife's a school teacher and our California Teachers Union gives us such good insurance, I had eye care and I had never had an eye exam because my eyes have been perfect my whole life. And then the guy's like, "You could probably use some glasses." But still haven't, I never wear them. But when the text is really small, and usually I just use Kindle so I can put it up on the screen. So here we go. When we debate an issue with someone, we spontaneously offer reasons for one position or another, when we expect that these have some claim on the other person's assent. If our reasons are strong, we generally assume that some assent is required unless the person can provide stronger reasons for an alternative, which would then in turn obligate us. Such everyday situations raises fundamental philosophical questions. Why should reason have a claim on us? And if it does, what exactly is that claim reason lays claim? What exactly is it that reason lays claim to in us? To what extent and by what principle does it bind? What is the force intended in the phrase by force of reason? Does truth move us by virtue of its being true or by virtue of something else? What exactly is a compelling argument? How do words compel? And getting into these kinds of questions, oh gosh, this first, I'm not even past the introduction to the book, and it's like, and then I read stuff like this, and of course there's talking about Nietzsche and Luther and Plato, and it's really bad. And now I can't see the screen as clearly as I could when I put on these glasses. See, that's why I don't like wearing glasses, because they're sort of like a drug. If I start wearing them, I have to wear them all the time, and I don't need to wear them to drive. It's only that somehow in this world, text is shrinking in books and on things, and even on my computer right now. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, all of this political translation that I do. So if my real reason for believing something is that I believe it because it's part of this presuppositional package that I inherited, and I'm just really clever at finding public justifications for things that are actually being motivated within me by implicit Christian presuppositions, well, then what am I doing? Am I lying in public? And then when it comes to wokeness, well, what's going on with that?
But that seems to me like one very particular specific formulation of liberalism that I, as a strong liberal, I'm not sure I agree with. I think I probably don't. And so it seems to me a bit of a shorthand to take that as a definition of liberalism. But we'll get to that liberalism conversation in a moment, perhaps. But the second is that doesn't seem to me like the claim that people are making about wokeness, right? They're not saying the problem with wokeness is that the people who are woke are based in this deep intellectual tradition in the way that perhaps a Christian might be. And really, they just need to translate what they're saying into secular language in such a way that people who don't come from the woke tradition can understand.
And that's interesting, too, because the idea is that, well, there are really good reasons out there. And if we can, I mean, we're knocking on the door of sophistry here. If there are really good reasons out there, and if I can go into the marketplace and the public square and the marketplace of thought and ideas, and I can sort of convince you with ideas that I gin up because I know that they're going to woo you. And this is part of the reason why social psychology and evolutionary psychology and all of this psychology can sort of fall into sophistry, because all I really need to do in a political democracy is convince you of something. It doesn't matter if those reasons are good. Now, maybe I believe that God said it, I believe it, that settles it. Well, that's good enough for me. But since you're not of faith, I'm going to use reason all over the place and somehow compel you one way or another by the spirit of reason to agree with me so that I can achieve the ends that I find from my divine revelation platform. Well, we've got some really interesting things going on here. And then wokeness comes in and you have standpoint epistemology and you have all of those aspects that James Lindsay and the hoaxers and Neil Shenvey like to pull out. And of course, you point to people who are people of color who are making these arguments because, of course, well, they can't. It's harder to yell bigot at somebody who's African American, the descendant of slaves, than someone who is a descendant of the Dutch who brought the slaves here in the first place. So But does any of that matter as long as we can convince the masses and get our point across in a democracy and win in the marketplace of ideas or at least somehow one way or another try to manipulate that enormous billion-dollar convincing machine called the internet and social media and Hollywood and all of those things to convince everyone that such and such is right and such is true. Somehow then reason does sort of have its legs kicked out under it, and we're again sort of back in sophistry.
The saying that doesn't seem to be the criticism. The criticism seems to be that wokeness fills some of the needs of religion. So perhaps it's more Durkheimian in that sense.
Wokeness gives people meaning, and that seems true.
And that because it fills those needs, it gives people a sort of pretense of meaning, and it...
And so that's how it's a religion, because a new atheist would say, you religious people are deriving meaning from narratives, and those narratives aren't fact-based, and therefore they are not supposed to be in the marketplace to begin with, and so... Stay at home with your creation science and your hooky textbooks where Adam rides a dinosaur, because isn't this just all sort of a play to convince more people than someone else, and then isn't my religious charlatanism just as valid on that score as your pretense of rationality and this edifice of truth that you imagine you are building with facts one on top of another?
It allows them to believe, fill some of the needs of religion, so perhaps it's more Durkheimian in that sense, and that because it fills those needs, it gives people a sort of pretense of meaning, and it allows them to believe in positions that actually aren't very well justified or aren't very rationally, logically coherent, because it's sort of so tempting a position. It seems to me like...
And that, of course, is what, in a way, what new atheists hit both wokies with and Christians with, especially because in some ways Christians, the wokesters are sort of just another branch of the Christians.
I mean, like something like that. But I don't know the objection to wokeness as religion from the people who believe in that analogy. It's not... Hey, you know, you should translate what you're talking about. It's you've fallen into an intellectual and cultural trap by subscribing to the set of beliefs because it like fills some need in you you didn't realize you had, which is a slightly different criticism, I think.
Because in some ways, isn't wokeness already pre-chewed and pre-translated? It seems almost nakedly political in that if religion is always and politics is now, and religion is heaven and politics is earth and secular, well, wokeness is basically the application of heaven to earth and the insistence that with certain political mechanisms, we can achieve it.
To me, I think those two things sound very similar. It's just that they're, you know, the argument that one is just sort of describing the process by which you have come to making the statement that is inappropriate in the public sphere, right? So I imagine that a lot of people, a lot of secular liberals, believe that I, a Catholic, simply believe what I believe because I have a fear of the unknown or something like that, and that it fulfills a lot of needs in me, you know. Never mind that I, a Catholic, agree to live with many more mysteries that I will.
In other words, it's worse than you prescribe celebrity atheists and new atheists, and they'll, yeah, that's true.
Willingly identify as mysteries and approach as mysteries and worship as such. But never mind all that. I think a lot of people believe that about religious people, that they have these needs and that's why they believe all these stupid things. But as long as we do our job and we come out in politics with arguments that our lies, really, is what they are. You know, we make statements about why we want certain political things, and we don't tell you our real reasons. We tell you other reasons that we think you will agree with. But that's how we're supposed to do public reason. What the woke stuff is that whatever their reasons are for having fallen into this kind of intellectual trap, they are making statements about what they want and what should happen politically, which are considered beyond reproach. You're not really allowed to criticize them without enduring a bunch of acrimony and attacks as though you're criticizing someone's very religion, their very concept of right and wrong. And they're doing this, you know, from a position of unimpeachability, despite the fact that they have not made adequate arguments about the priors and about why the rest of society should agree with them. And so I do think it is simple.
And I think what she's basically arguing here, and I think she's right, is that, you know, wokeness, and one of the guys in my meetup, and I know you don't watch my videos, but your brother does, and he might point you to this one, that wokeness is basically bullying. That it's basically religious bullying. Whereas in, let's say, 500 years ago, if you defy us, you're going to hell. Now, hell is basically an assault. Instead of eternal conscious torment, it's basically reputational assassination.
Or in some way to almost imposing a kind of theocracy, in that they're able to make moral claims. They're able to make sort of claims about moral fact and the impacts that those moral facts should have on politics without justifying them in the way that we expect people to justify those things and be subject to public criticism in a liberal democracy. I think that's part of the argument.
In other words, it's a cheat. You've basically taken the rules and you've circumvented them, and you figured out the trick that as long as you keep the Jesus bumper stickers off your things, you can do your wokeness smuggling into the public square and bully everyone into submission. And in that way, and then other suspicions take over, that what you're actually doing underneath is this is just all a status game. And then we sort of get into the luxury beliefs and the luxury morality, and you're just playing this game for status.
I was just going to say that I think that seems like the difference between the criticism that people make of wokeness and the way you originally read it, right? Which is to say that what John Rawls talks about is a society in which he assumes that people have a radical diversity of substantive beliefs, a radical diversity of what he calls comprehensive doctrines. So some will be rooted in Catholicism or Protestantism, different forms of that. Some will be very secular. You know, the kinds of things that structure their lives is really radically different from each other. And so then...
Now what's interesting, though, is that once you, in almost every system, once you set up rules, people are going to look for ways around those rules. And so what you might imagine is wokeness is just the next evolutionary turn, how to get around the rules.
And when he is saying, hey, you know, as a Christian, you should be speaking in such a way that people who don't share these deep moral priors can get what you're talking about, and they don't feel like, well, that's not applicable to me because I don't share those priors. So put your reasons forward in a secular way. His fear isn't really about something like theocracy, right? His fear is about facilitating that kind of overlapping consensus, facilitating the conversation. And again, I think there's good reasons to be critical of asking citizens to falsify sort of the moral register in which they actually want to speak to that extent, and that's well taken. But I think when people criticize the wokeness, it's more like they criticize what they regard, fairly or unfairly, as a kind of incipient theocracy. Like, their concern is not, hey, you know, you speak too much from within your own values, and so I can't understand you, or that's making claims on me in an unfair way. It's, no, you want to impose this set of views without allowing dissent in a way that feels more like, I just have to defer because you're the high priest and I have no ability to contest what you're saying without serious risk to my social standing or my career or whatever it might be in that context. And so, again, that seems like quite a different way of worrying about wokeness as religion.
Yeah, and my response would just be, one of the weaknesses of political liberalism is that it thinks about a diverse array of things as one thing. So when I said that, you know, liberalism kind of creates this category that is religion, and it's just things that are kind of too radioactive for politics, you know, things that compete with liberalism itself as the kind of moral register in which we do politics. And I will say, the first time we met, I was bearish on liberalism. And the reason that I was down on it is because it's so in the air we breathe, it's hard to explain to a lot of Democrats in the United States, speaking strictly of the party here, the barriers they have to understanding what socialism is. Their beliefs about capitalism come from liberal theories of private property and ownership that come out of Locke and so forth. And you cannot get them to understand. They're just provisional beliefs, right? They're not inherent in the universe. You don't have to believe what you believe about private property and theories of ownership. You can have the same functional political system with slightly different views of what desert and property have in common and, you know, how those two things are related. So those were bearish on liberalism at the time. How times have changed. The parts of liberalism that I have always been bullish on are the freedom of expression and the free inquiry. I'm a Christian. I have no problem with these things because I believe God is the truth. Truth will set you free. I don't have any problem with free inquiry and free expression because I believe that if you earnestly pursue the truth, you're only going to find God waiting for you. Just earnestly keep searching and that's all you'll find. Maybe you don't identify it as such, but that's what you actually happen upon, right? This is Platonism, right? And I'm a Christian Neoplatonist. You're just going to find the forms, right? So I have no problem with that. But that is actually the kind of half of liberalism that's taken the hit. And the private property capitalism shit is stronger than ever. That part of liberalism is doing just fine.
You call yourself a Christian and you say the S word.
Fine. While the freedom of expression, free inquiry part of liberalism is sort of crumbling. So now I find myself in the weird position of kind of trying to say, you know, I feel like Nathan Hale in The Crucible, the guy who shows up gung-ho at first to do witch hunting. And then sort of by the last act is like, wait, this has gone way off the rails. People have decided to go nuts on the completely wrong part of liberalism. The part that does all the vicious exploitation and destruction of human life and the wanton immiseration of everyone, that part they let off scot-free. It's the part that actually has led to tremendous amounts of progress that they have decided to attack. At any rate, this is where I would say, you know, you get this tradition of religion in liberalism, and it's describing this thing that is too radioactive, too much of a challenge to liberalism itself to incorporate into politics. When you look at the context of the 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, you can...
So in other words, we brought all these things and said, okay, you know, if we're not going to kill each other, bring your boxes tomorrow, and we'll put all of these things in the boxes. And this is in some ways the great American experiment. We'll put all these things in the boxes. You can take those boxes home. You can have your little shrines at the corner of Florin Road and Amherst. You can go to Rome on pilgrimage if you want to, but there's not going to be a religious test. But then suddenly with wokeness, we begin to see religious tests. But then we've often kind of had religious tests, you know. Are we going to elect a Catholic president in 1960 or not? Is the Catholic president we elected in 2020 really a Catholic or not Catholic enough? So, you know, liberalism is in this way kind of an agreement where there's a fair amount of winking and denial. And now, of course, wokeness comes on and like, I'm not changing the rules. And everybody's like, I'm not sure you're not or you are or what were these rules again or... Maybe all that stuff that we sort of painted over and peeled the stickers off of and, you know, made the cross and said, no, that's just an I-beam. And the Jesus, well, that's just a representation of a man. We won't give him a name and we'll use peace and goodness and kindness and those things. Well, maybe all that's coming to an end.
Really understand why that was. It had been a huge albatross to Europe for such a long time. And you can see that the slow incorporation of liberal polities did change quite a bit of that for the better. And I do not believe the Catholic Church was blameless in this period. Far from it. You can see, to put it lightly, a few excesses there. And the problem is that religions, actually, everything that gets lumped into that category, these things do not actually necessarily have things in common.
I think there's sort of three interrogations of liberalism on the table, one in which we agree and two in which we'll see to what extent we agree. So one is about free speech, free inquiry, and so on. And I think, you know, I'd love to hear your case for why that's important, but I think we're likely to agree on that. Then the second is about religion and how liberalism does or should treat religion. And I'm not sure to what extent we will disagree there, at least on my reading of liberalism. So I'd be interested in having it out. And then the third is the relationship between liberalism and, I guess, broadly speaking, capitalism or free markets, and what kind of version of it necessarily follows from liberalism. And again, I'm not sure about the extent of disagreement we're going to have there. So if you don't mind, why don't we go sort of one by one on that? So first of all, if you just want to make a brief case for what is it that you find attractive about the free speech, free inquiry part of liberalism?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, people are natural philosophers. I think we're made to search for meaning in the universe, and that an epiphenomenon of that search is the creation of art and expression. I think we're naturally social, and the way that we express our sociality is largely by expression. And I just have a really hard time imagining a justification for at least using the power of the state, especially a concentrated superpowered state such as we have now, to punish expression to coup. Now,
don't forget, this is a Catholic socialist talking here. And so a bunch of you libertarians are going to be really rolling your eyes at what you just said.
I certainly think there are limits there. I believe there are just fucking worthless forms of expression.
And you call yourself a Christian and you use the F word.
And there are forms of expression that have costs that are too high for the value of the thing being expressed. And these are the very typical examples you probably already have in your head. Fire in a crowded theater. You're expressing something completely worthless because there's not a fire. And it costs, you know, potentially a huge amount because you have the risk of people getting hurt or trampled or whatever. Obscene materials, child pornography, and so forth. I'm pretty firm on some of that stuff being banned and punished legally.
Certain professors at Yale University seem to.
And they go off on the kiddie porn thing for a little bit, which I'm going to skip because that's not really germane to what we're doing here.
Accuse you.
Exclusively published, actually been investigated this ability of free chunk of liberalism that has led to, you know, quite a bit of progress, not only in the sciences, but in literature, in the arts, in politics. In general, I think the liberal etiquette, you know, there's a strain of stoicism in liberal manners of kind of using your intellect to control your emotions when you're having a conversation with someone. And it doesn't mean that you're across the board and at all times civil. Teresa Bejan, who's a great professor, I believe, at Oxford, wrote a text called Mere Civility. It's a great book. And it's like, you don't have to be sort of cloyingly polite. There have certainly been harsh debates in liberal societies, but there's this acknowledgement that it stopped short of attempts of total character assassination and violence. And I think those rules of conduct are, on the whole, good.
And I will defend to the blood the liberty of Yale University professors to character assassinate you. But
now, I want you to get to the second point, and I'm afraid you're not going to get there.
That doesn't mean that I have to respect them afterwards. Let's move to the second part of three things that I want just to get through on liberalism, and that's the role of religion. So, look, I agree that historically one of the attempts of liberalism has been to try to help and deal with, you know, religious wars in Europe and the kind of real bloodshed you get when the idea is that everybody has to have a religion, for example, of the king or of a dictator in some parts of the world. And I think liberalism is very important at softening the impact of religion in those contexts. I also agree with you that there are countries to...
Well, and religion affords pluralism, which is it's something that affords... I mean, part of what afforded... helped people not kill each other and be able to maintain an empire in the ancient world was polytheism. And in some ways, pluralism and polytheism are analogous.
Today, that in my mind, use liberalism in an attempt to downplay religion or to curtail the ability that religious people have to express themselves in the public sphere in a way that goes too far. I'm recording this in France. I actually have much admiration for France in many ways, but I do think that part of French secularism goes too far in how far it curtails how religious people can appear in public and what kind of role it can give to religion in the public sphere. Having said that, you know, for me, the reason why I'm a liberal has a lot to do with religion, for I'm not a religious person. And that is that it starts with a really difficult puzzle that we face in the United States and in virtually every other democracy around the world now, of how do you deal with genuine diversity of identity, of ethnicity and skin color, but also of religious belief, of what Rawls would call comprehensive doctrines. And to me, the best we can do is precisely to give people a set of liberal freedoms, not because we think that everybody is an individualist to whom the most important thing is just to follow the whims and the conscience. Not even because we think that most citizens are going to take an active choice at 18 to leave whatever community they grew up in and to run into the arms of some other religious or other community. But precisely because we know how important their beliefs are to so many people. And if you think about how you organize a society in which you can be a deep, devoted Christian, and I can be an agnostic and somebody else can be a convinced atheist, that we can share polity and be compatriots in a meaningful way, I think you wind up with a liberal account of individual rights and so on, because that's what facilitates our respective ability to follow our conscience and to live up to the religious imperatives that many of our fellow citizens feel in a very deep way. So for me, there's a version of liberalism that isn't anti-religious or that doesn't deny the prime role that religion has in the lives of many people. It actually flows from the recognition of its importance. And I guess I would want to know whether you'd be okay with that version of liberalism or...
And of course, this structure within which you can have religious pluralism isn't itself neutral. There is no purely neutral meta-divine realm that actually has structure, because structure will create constraints and therefore shape outcomes.
What a criticism of it would be.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. I mean, I think we all get older. And I mean, when I was younger, I don't know, I had hotter opinions on everything. I mean, what I can say is that I've seen this integralist thing fluff up on the Catholic right. And the integralist tendency is, of course, this view that Catholics should accept nothing less than the full
Bracing myself for Catholic comments.
Integration of the Catholic Church and the state, and zero separation between church and state and so forth, and kind of a benevolent Gelasian diarchy with the Pope and the King ruling together. And, you know, I've also reported deeply on the Catholic sex abuse crisis. These people can't run a fucking railroad, man. They're not going to be able to run a country. I mean, we can't run a country, but, you know, we don't need to be mixing the chocolate and the peanut butter here. It's not going to be good. They have enough problems on their own. I think a Christian's job is to do the most amount of good they can with the dispensation they find themselves in. So I have begun to think, what is the most good I can do in the dispensation I have found myself in? I find myself in a rapidly polarizing liberal democracy that's becoming, you know, somewhat dysfunctional because of its brittleness in this state of polarization. And so my interest has become in trying to soften these cords that have become brittle between people, making the, you know, raising the tensile strength of the relationships between citizens. As a journalist and a member of the press, which is an important estate in this society, and trying to do what I can to act against what I feel like is a fairly stupid and self-perpetuating cycle of polarization that has to do with people losing face and trying to save face. And that's what I think the duty of Christians has to be at this point. The liberal democracy that we have is what we have. It's what we have. And liberal democracies are interesting. I mean, they're like, they are a little bit radioactive, right? In that when they're functional, they're safe. When they start to degrade, you don't know what you're going to get.
She used radioactive twice in this thing in very competing ways, but I'll overlook it.
I don't really know what's going to happen if our liberal democracy, under the forces of this sort of polarization and brittleness that we are now encountering, starts to degrade too much, but I don't want to find out. I would like it to remain stable. I would like things to change politically. Like you said, I'm a Bernie bro. I think that having a stronger welfare state would be great. I think having higher social trust would be fantastic. I mean, these are things that I...
Bracing myself for a lot of comments from a lot of you.
...deeply desire. And I want peace. And I think, you know, the fact that those stated goals, if I tweeted out right now, you know, I want a generous welfare state. I want to abolish poverty. I want peace. I want forgiveness. I want high social trust. And I want strong relationships between the citizenry. That would piss people off.
And the last part of it would...
Would it? I mean, the Bernie bro stuff would piss some people off, but I don't know. I tend to think of what she just said is fairly broadly embraced. Maybe I'm not woke enough, and maybe it's the wokesters that don't want that. And maybe, I mean, she writes for The Atlantic. She's living in a very different world than I am in the Christian Reformed Church or in my little congregation. So,
piss people off the most, right? You wrote a great article recently on, I think, death shaming, you called it.
Yes. Making fun of dead people for dying unvaccinated of COVID-19. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is really, to me, it's such a symptom of this moment, this sort of, you want your fellow citizens to be as dumb and as suffering as possible. And you want to take joy in the misery. There's something in
envy
in the culture at the moment about that, but I find just really deeply off-putting. I want to make sure, as we end this conversation, to touch on the third aspect of liberalism we want to discuss, which is the economic one. And actually there...
And that's where I'm going to draw the line. So, yeah, I thought this was a really quite an interesting analysis of not just the question of wokeness, but the... Which sort of got lost in the conversation, but that's what happens in conversations. But basically, to what degree can liberalism be salvaged? What aspects of it do we want to retain? And I think, again, in terms of the broader narrative, Protestantism was built deeply into liberalism and modernity. And as those things go away, Some of the benefits and virtues that we have benefited by, you know, treating the Catholic Church as a church, not as the church. These are things that, you know, these are the things that we're wrestling with. So anyway, there's a podcast. The dude has more. I don't know if I'll listen to any more. Maybe some of you will. It's, let me know what you think.